Today is Monday, November 29th, 2010, and as we said yesterday, you guys live in a better world than I grew up in. On the other hand, you live in a terrible world, because take a look at all the millions of documents, hundreds of thousands of documents that are being released. Every state secret is being told. Believe me, 200 years ago, if anyone revealed secrets like this, they executed him in public. 30 years ago, they executed him privately, quietly. But today, you can reveal on the internet what goes on, and it's very embarrassing. But it shows you that the rumors in Israel that the Arab countries wanted America to destroy Iran are correct. Now you have it in black and white. But I wouldn't sell the rulers in Saudi Arabia a life insurance policy at this moment in time. Okay, now I want to make one addendum, correction to something. I don't remember what class I said it in, but Rabbi, one of my students, Rabbi Grunstein, just called me, and he was listening to a shiur a number of weeks ago. And remember, we spoke about the concept of the Shabbos bus, Rabbi Riskin's proposal, Rabbi Jacob Simcha Cohen's proposal. So I said I thought Rabbi Riskin came up with it in the 90s. I was wrong. He came up with it originally in the 60s. And the idea was to call it a Shabbos bus or something, a Shabbos. And on the bus it would be written Matan Zachar Yom HaShabbat LeKadsho. And it would be everything I said in class was correct. The guy would be driving it in suburbia. Oh, it had to be in this course that we came up with it when we spoke about driving to Shul on Shabbos. And Rabbi Riskin went to the Rav, and that was the end of the idea. The Rav nixed it. So the idea has come up again, in a volume that just came out by Rabbi Jacob Simcha Cohen, not because of suburbia, but you have to know Florida. I've been in Florida a number of times. I'm at the age that one should be in Florida permanently, but thank God when I go to Florida and I look around what's going on, Shmuel, I feel like a kid again, you understand? I get back my energies. But in Florida, you have... excuse me?
Rosh Hashanah writes in the Kriya Tzom about why he thinks the Shabbos is usher.
The Shabbos bus?
Because of the Misana.
What?
Architect of the Misana and Yerkel Yagwar. I think it's the
Architect
of the Misana.
Architect of the Misana, because
the
conservatives...
I
wouldn't go that far. Akasad Masanah means changing your shoe license, giving your life at a time of... he said that in a number of times. I wouldn't go that far.
That's really exaggerated.
Right. So you got to be careful when you speak in public. Rabbi Rubin, relax. Don't get upset. But Rabbi Jacob Simcha Cohen brought up the idea in his new book. And he admits that he spoke with the Moshe Davatenla and he was upset with it. And, look, we have to come back to my question when I came out of Russia the first time. And they asked me to ask Rav Gorin and the Rav about going to Shul on Shabbos on the metro, buying the ticket in advance, and everything I spoke about. And you remember Rabbi Gorin got up, wanted to beat me, hit me, kick me. What are you, a conservative? Well, I'm not a conservative rabbi, you know. And his poor wife ran after me, and she was worried I'd be upset. She didn't know by 1981, Danny, I'd been through life. I didn't get upset too easily. She sat me down. She gave me coffee and cake. And she looked at all my pictures from Russia. And, you know, she calmed me down. But when I called the Rav, I'll never forget, he said, with all my sympathy and empathy, and I understand the Shaila, in Chfil Fazeh, but we can't permit it this Zman Hazeh because of, the conservative movement. So they're all saying the same thing. Okay. Anyway, come back here. Today she is crucially important. Yeah.
How can that be justified? Michael,
it's not a question of making lechem. It's a factor that we can't look like conservative Jews. Look at it that way. It's not that there's a lot more to it. It's not simple to be matir a bus, going around on Shabbos, amir la'akum. Every person getting on the bus adds to the weight. There are a lot of factors here. It's not a simple matter. But among the factors, you have to take in consideration the conservatives who've broken down Yiddishkeit was ascribing to shul, and we can't be part of such a institution that may be misinterpreted. Look, you want to know about Russia? We spoke last week. You heard from a Russian, whether it was in this class or the other class. I see that our Russian student is underground now until the Bechina. Am I correct, Danny? I see he's studying. I saw him upstairs yesterday in a corner. I feel bad for him. You tell the Rebbeim in my name that he gets... when you play golf, what do they call it when you play golf?
Handicap.
A handicap. He gets automatically, Danny... If you get a 90 and he gets a 70, his 70 is equal to your 90. You follow me? Tell that to Rabbi Bednash in my name. Okay. They're younger than me, the Rebbeim. They have to take orders from an older Rebbe. Here, you see my students? Look at him. I have more hair left than Yehuda Singer. So what do you want out of me? Yes, Nachum. That's what Michael Miller is saying. He's saying exactly what you're saying. You want my answer, it wouldn't make a difference. But among the other factors, Rav Ruderman was making, Rav Meisher was making, you heard with your own ears from a Russian who said over a psak. I heard it when I was in Russia. Aaron Rakevit was not making, because I felt they were already Balei Tshuva. And if we permit people using the underground, we're not giving real Yiddishkeit. And ultimately, a miracle happened today in Russia. You have money, you can build a minyan anywhere. You saw what the papers released. It's a miracle that we don't have a document yet released. I'm waiting for the New York Times tomorrow headline. Putin is a secret Chabadnik. Take my word for it. That's going to be a headline in tomorrow's New York Times.
This is an interesting point. Some rabbis hold that you can't go into a conservative synagogue.
Right.
So in other words, he's a conservative synagogue for a catering call, even if the catering call is completely
controlled
by the caterer, is not permitted.
Right.
Others
right.
hold that it is permitted.
Right.
So
correct.
It's a similar ish kind of an issue in terms of just the very act of going into a conservative show.
I can only tell you
for
the
any reason it's not permitted.
So Michael, I can only tell you the following. You want to know halacha l'maisa, let me tell you a true story that, thank God, I know with these ears. I taught in YU in New York. So you think it's only today we have Balei Tshuva in YU. Today more than half the Kollel, half the fellas in the Kollel are Balei Tshuva. Last year more than half the Kollel. Already in the 60s you had Balei Tshuva. So we had Shilas, and Rabbi Finkelstein ran the high school at the time. George Finkelstein, he runs Hegel Shlomo today. You check the story with him. So this kid's father is a Reform rabbi. The kid was picked up by NCSY, and he's now going home for Pesach. And he asks Rabbi Finkelstein, what should I do, Pesach? My father is a Reform rabbi. How can I daven in the temple? I don't know what to do. So George says, all right, we'll make an appointment with Rabbi Soloveitchik. They make an appointment, they go across the street to the Rav, his apartment in Morgenstern dorm, and the Rav tells the kid Bezal Hashem. And by the way, I know this, a few times this happened, it's not only once. The Rav says to the kid, you will give your father all the respect in the world. You're learning in the yeshiva. He's paying your bills. He's supporting you. You will do just what I tell you. You will daven at home, everything. Then you will go to shul with your father. You will sit wherever he wants you to. You will hold a tehillim in your hand. You will say tehillim. You will rise when the people rise. You will sit when the people sit. That was the Rav's psak, quote unquote. So that answers your question. I can only tell you in the five towns, the biggest caterer is the Reform Temple on Central Avenue. Glatt Kosher Catering. And I can tell you that, as far as I saw, everyone in the five towns goes... Do you know what the five towns? That's a suburb. The five towns, New York Times had an article how the old-time Jews had to move out, and they interviewed them. Why are they moving out? They're embarrassed to drive on Shabbos. And the New York Times says, and what bothered them more is that the Jews who moved in with beard, payers, black clothes, are wealthier than they are. And these were wealthy Long Island Jews. So everyone goes there, that's all they can answer you. But anyway, these are delicate questions, and it depends on circumstances. You can't give, I wouldn't give a black and white answer, because this is more a political issue than a halachic issue. So a rabbi, I just discussed this with Rabbi Miller yesterday, we were discussing Rabbi Heschel Schechter and giving psak, and Reb David and I both agreed that generally speaking, in any shaila you get from a student today in the rabbinate, the political implications are as important as the halacha. Okay? I'm saying it in popular language. All right, now let's move on. We saw last week the Commission on Jewish Law dealt with electricity on Shabbos, and we all read about, we all studied about driving on Shabbos, the Committee on Jewish Law and the minority opinion, the majority opinion. And while all this was happening, the pressure of outside life was overwhelming. And the lay people, the rank and file, the United Synagogue, the temples across America, they were pressuring. And you had a seminary election for president in 73. One candidate was totally observant, Bernard Mandelbaum. He lost. Related to me by marriage. Gerson Cohn, who was a historian and already an innovator, he won that election. 70s, the pressures of building up, you can't imagine the Vietnamese War, the liberals, the Jews. And as the Reb said many times, that you can, to a certain degree, you can understand where anti-Semitism begins. Jews were so involved with socialism, communism, anarchism. It may even be that Lenin was Jewish. Today we know that Lenin had one Jewish grandmother reputed to be Jewish mother. If that's the case, Lenin may have been Jewish, let alone Frankel, Engels, Trotsky, one after another. Jews were attracted. Now, we're going to come back to this, if not today, in a week's time, in 2 weeks' time. There's no classes next week. We're not there because of Hanukkah. So be aware. And the pressure. After the Vietnamese War ends in defeat of the United States, due to all this pressure, and Watergate, which totally weakens. But by the way, you should know that Israelis until today can't comprehend what Nixon did was so wrong in Watergate. Am I right or wrong? Israelis can't comprehend until today. It's beyond Israeli mentality. What was so bad? So he put in a listening device. What's the big deal? You see what's going on with the... By the way, you saw at the police department, that was right. I said on Shabbos that Balev is finished, and yesterday it became official. But I'm angry beyond Balev. It's not just Balev. It's Franco. It's every last one. These guys walk around. Pardon me. They're not dressed. These are the head of the police in Israel. Israel is under attack all the time. This is not a sin. Not being head of police in Brooklyn. And take a look what we have. So the pressure's building up. And then you have the feminist revolution. And you got to understand that feminist revolution is real. It is tangible. And again, who are the high priests? One of Bella Abtsev. Gloria Steinem. It turns out Gloria Steinem was not Jewish, just her father. She's still alive, just her father is Jewish. And then she disgraced the movement because she married a Jewish man who had money. And he was much older than her. I don't know, I read the article. Oh, what a shame. She sold herself for the sake of marriage and marrying a man who was older who had money. But these were all Jews. And then you get the first whiff already in the 70s into the 80s, no one would ever believe the homosexuality is normative. That I told you in BBC, a man lived, they interviewed people in 2000, 2001, people who were born before 1900 and lived to see 2000 and were still with it. So they interview this British guy, a guy Gummler, I don't know who the guy is. They interview him, listening to BBC, and they say to him, what's the most shocking thing? You've lived over 100 years. What have you seen in your life? He says, the most shocking thing I've ever seen in my life, who would ever dream that you would say two men can marry, two women can marry? I wanted to kiss the guy. I heard it on the radio. I couldn't do anything. But I was amazed. So you see, these pressures are building up. Now, what was holding back the seminary, what was keeping traditionalism, was one man, Professor Shaul Lieberman. And as we spoke about Professor Lieberman, you're dealing here with a world gaon. You're dealing here with an individual who was 100% observant. The question of what he was doing in the seminary, we discussed. You saw Rabbi Rubin took a very sharp stand, and there you should know you're in total agreement with Rabbi Schechter, who took exactly your stand in my office the other day. So the two of you are in total agreement on that issue. I'm a little less strident, not that I would have, chas v'chalilah. I told you in my own life story, I was offered big positions and I turned them down immediately. But I know poverty and I know what Liebman went through, and I can understand the lure of being able to have a fine panasa and being able to sit and learn and write and produce and not have to worry about meeting his bills. So Professor Lieberman held the fort. Now, you'll say to me, there were other faculty members. And there's no doubt that every last member of the Talmudic faculty in the seminary at this moment in time, with the turn of the 1980s, every last faculty member was 100% Shema Shabbos and Shema Mitzvah. Every last one. We're going to have names shortly. What were they doing in the seminary? The scientific approach. The scientific approach. And I'm not here to dismiss the scientific approach. You all benefit from the scientific approach. You open up Meiri, you're benefiting from Rabbi Schreiber's editing. He was a seminary faculty member. He scientific. You have a Tosefta Pshuta. You benefit. I was told by a student who told me this story. Oh, I was told by a student of mine in America, Rabbi Gil's student, when he was a student in the yeshiva, and he told me he was more right-wing than he is today. So he asked his Rebbe, Rabbi Meir Twesky, can I use the Tosefta Kepshuta? It's written by Professor Lieberman, and Rabbi Meir Twesky said, absolutely. So, all right. You have one after another, but they carried no weight. You see, when it comes to faculty, there's always a star who rises above everyone else. Yeshiva University was a tremendous faculty, tremendous lamdanim. I can tell you, Eidet Nemana, the only one who counted was the Rav. It began with the Rav and ended with the Rav. With all due respects to the Telzer, that we had Telzer Rashi Yeshiva, we had Slabatka Rashi Yeshiva, we had Ratna Rashi Yeshiva, we had Mira Rashi Yeshiva, Lamdanim of Hakam, but they all paled in the presence of the Rav. You understand, the Rav, when he died, the New York Times eulogized him, that since the time of Maimonides, there have been few Jews that had the intellectual capability of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. I'm not saying this as a student. If you just study Kiddushei Torah, Sheyurim Lezecha Abba Mari, if you open up his Chespedim for the Brisker Rav, his uncle, for his Rebbe father image, Reb Chaim Heller, you shiver, you shake when you study the man's philosophical essay, Isha Halacha. He played later in English the lonely man of faith. All right? Adam 1, Adam 2. You know how many his talk that I was there in person with my girlfriend from Bnei Akiva, who later became my wife and the grandmother of a young man sitting here. So we were in the audience, and you take his talk, Kol Dodi Dofei.
Ribbono Shel Olam, what a mind, what insight. The same thing at the seminary. Professor Lieberman was Shichmo Lamala. No, so what are you getting upset about?
Because he had no influence.
What good is
his being a great scholar? And he got paid and he did it.
Relax.
What influence did he have on the students?
I want to see Shama Friedman's book from you. Don't forget. I want to borrow it. I don't want to go through it with a tooth comb. And we'll see. See how he compares to Professor Liebman. But that's not a question of influence. It's a question of he was the dominant faculty member. Will you agree with that? The others didn't. It's like YU. I'll mention to you Rav Volk, Rav Honest, Rav Girelik. Girelik, he made a lot of noise at Getumult. How much influence did he have? Show me more than 10 students that followed Rav Yeruchim Girelik's point of view in the 40 years he taught at Yeshiva University. One of them is Moshe Pasek, perhaps. Right or wrong? You got it. Okay, and I read here, Rabbi Pasek is entitled. I'm not criticizing him. There's freedom of choice. We don't clone students. We inspire. But at the seminary, it was Professor Liebman. I hate to put it this way, but the feeling at the seminary was, if you spoke to the students, if I can paraphrase the Midrash, remember what Aaron HaKohen's children said? Matai Yamutu. When will the old people die so we can take over? They were just waiting for Professor Lieberman to disappear from the scene. He was the impediment that held back the hurricane of change. March 23rd, 1983. Professor Liebman was widowed. Well, you hear the word widowed. There are all types of...
83.
Yeah. He was widowed a few years already. She died, I think, 79. I gave the years of... Sure. In 1983. Listen to me carefully.
Oh, yeah. March 23rd, 1983.
He's been widowed now a number of years. Some people get widowed. I don't want to go into detail. I still remember 1977. I was sent by the Israeli government to address the Rabbinical Council of America at convention. Matan, you're not married yet. Don't listen to these words. It'll frighten you. And at the convention, the Rav cried about his wife who had died 10 years earlier. My word of honor. I walk out of the hall where all the Rabbanim into the hallway. This is the Pineview Hotel. It's a different world then. And Rabbi Yeruchim Girelik is commanding with a crowd around him, and Veitnach, he's still crying for his wife, it's 10 years ago. And then the rabbis outdid each other. One rabbi says, if God would do me a favor and take her from me, I'd dance on her grave. Another rabbi says, I'd do a kazatska, you understand? Each one, this way we finish a lilam. So, you know, there's widowed and widowed. The great people I knew, when they were widowed, they were never the same again. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, Yibodeh L'chaim Aruchim V'tovim, Rav Ovadia Yosef. All right. Professor Liebman was never the same. He had a wonderful marriage with his wife, Dr. Judith Berlin Lieberman. And there are hard moments in life, those of you that will study psychology. Pesach is the worst time of the year. Because Pesach is a family holiday. Professor Liebman had no children. I don't know what the problem was. Judith, him, whatever. They couldn't have children. Pesach comes. People who don't have family are depressed. So Professor Liebman's minhag was for Pesach to fly to Eretz Yisrael, where he spent Pesach with his brother, Reb Avraham Lieberman. Had a brother living here with a big family, you know, Haredim, a wonderful family, Chazon Ish's family. Don't forget Professor Liebman's yichus, he was a first cousin to the Chazon Ish. Their mothers were sisters. He gets on the El Al plane in New York. like we all do. Get on the plane. No, you eat, you go to sleep. He never woke up from the sleep, from the nap. We have a doctor here can explain it, but it was the kiss of death on a plane going through Eretz Yisrael. I remember it like yesterday. And of course he was buried here. Now with his death, the last impediment was gone. That advertisement I showed you at the end of the shiur last week, and I have copies, I'll give it out at the end of class, could never have been published in Professor Liebman's life. But 1983, the seminary is already free to say what they want. And if you recall the ad, it is a replay of what I spoke about in class yesterday. We are smarter than Moshe Rabbeinu. We are smarter than Rabbi Akiva. We have more knowledge. We have archaeology. We have a scientific approach. We have computers. We can change religion because we're smarter. And that's exactly what I told you yesterday, Professor Moshe Greenberg saying to me, you are not Yotzei Tzvillin because you're not putting on Rabbeinu Tam's Tzvillin. I bought a pair of Rabbeinu Tam. Whatever they found in the Dead Sea, they opened it up, was Rabbeinu Tam's Tzvillin. Not Rashi. No, you take that approach, you take all of Yiddishkeit, you can throw it away. It's the exact opposite of the Rav's unbelievable hesped of Rav Chaim Heller. Never forget that hesped. I consider that the finest piece that the Rav ever developed. If you want to know what Torah is about, look up the Rav's hesped. It's called today Pleikat Sofreim. Originally it was called Shmuel HaKatan Shel Doreinu. By the way, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein disagrees with me. He says it's number two, and number one is the Rav's hesped for the Brisker Rav, which is unbelievable, that hesped. It's true. I remember Rav Yeruchim Guralik saying to me, no one hit and analyzed the Brisker Rav better than Rav Sardin, than Moreno Rabbeinu, Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. But I say it's number two. You know why? Because the Brisker Rav is a small part of Yiddishkeit. You can be a very good Jew and not know Brisk. Right or wrong, you can be a very good Jew and not know Ger Chassidus. You can be a very good Jew and not know Bel's Chassidus. It's a fabulous understanding of Brisk and how Brisk developed and where Brisk became Brisk. I know the Hesped by heart, but that Hesped is about one little concept in Yiddishkeit. Pleitat Sofreihem is the heart of what makes us Torah Jews. The remnant that survives. And I differ with Rabbi Lichtenstein, and believe me, Shmuel, for me to differ with Rabbi, I need a lot of guts, and I ought to smack my face. How dare you differ with Rabbi Lichtenstein? But on that issue, I beg to differ. It's okay. Rabbi will accept it graciously. Take my word for it, Yehuda. But what a chesed. What a plate. It's the exact opposite. See, the seminary ad, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand what Rabbi Akiva is talking about. Rabbi Akiva won't understand what we're talking about. And they take a Gemara in Menachot, Daf Chaf Tet, you quote the Gemara. We look at that Gemara totally differently. But that ad could never have been published when Professor Liebman was alive. And then something else happens. Right at this point, everyone is talking change, change, change. The drums of war are beating. You cannot run away. The United Synagogue, the people, the members, the conservative movement, they're now four generations removed from an East European grandmother or an East European grandfather. They're four generations removed from Yiddish. Yeah, this is a reality. It's like life marches on. In Israel, it's seeing exactly the same thing. Who would ever dream that Barak's children would get married with a Reform rabbi and live in New York? Barak, the man running the country, Minister of Defense. You know who his great-grandfather was? No, you're missing. The history of the Musa movement, you've studied Novadic, you studied with Rakefet Baruch Hashem. who was the altar of Nabadik Rabbi Yisrael Harvitz, when his Talmidim Mufhakim Bork. Look in any Musa history book, you'll see the name Harav Bork, Harav Bork, Harav Bork. Harav Bork is Ehud Barak's great grandfather. Got it? Removed his Ehud Barak's mother. You know who she is? Were you here after the Yom Kippur War? There was a tremendous hit or a root of Tshuva. We don't know how we're alive until today. Never did so many owe so much to so few. Quote, Josef Borg. A few Hezda boys went to war, Yom Kippur, Syria, Egypt. No one knows until today. There were no soldiers there. Syria should have been in Tel Aviv. Egypt should have been in Beersheba. You know why they stopped moving? They were worried it was a trap. They couldn't believe that the Negev was wide open for them. So after the Yom Kippur War, the kibbutz where Barak grew up, they voted anyone who wants to put up a mezuzah on their front door, the kibbutz will pay for it. Two people in the kibbutz refused to put up a mezuzah. One of them was Barak's mother, the daughter of a rav. Do you know the expression in Yiddish? Arav's hatachta. When you went out with girls and they told you these arav's hatachta, you ran the other way as fast as your feet could carry you. Okay? So, you got to understand what was happening. These people are removed from pressure. People sense what was going to be. And you have your first breakaway within the conservative movement. The breakaway begins then. I give you the first ad they published, October 14th, 1983. Big ad.
After the seminary's ad?
After what?
The seminary's ad?
Yes, after the seminary's ad. Of course, it's a month later. It's here. The seminary's ad. I'll give you the date. That's right, Erev Rosh Hashanah, 1983. So this ad appeared about 3-4 weeks later. It announces, watch, a new organization, Union for Traditional Conservative Judaism, in the spirit of Solomon Schechter. Recognize it, know what becomes of it, where it is today. Correct. But this is the way they began. Union for Traditional Conservative Judaism in the spirit of Solomon Schechter. And if you believe that conservative Judaism should remain true to its historic message, conservative Judaism is traditional Judaism. Listen to this line. Evolutionary change is in order, not revolutionary change. Evolution, diddly, to evolve. Lihit pateach. You understand? To grow naturally. That's the word. Revolutionary mapecha. Merit. Okay? Jewish law may be decided only by the foremost Talmudic scholars. How many of you have opened up the latest issue of Jewish Action? How many of you have read Rav Heschel Schechter's article? Isn't Rav Heschel one and the same in that article? Isn't that exactly the point he makes? Jewish law may be decided only by the foremost Talmudic scholars. The family is the cornerstone of Jewish life. Homosexuality, lesbianism, not getting married, not having children. The problem we have today, just discussed it with someone yesterday, I forget. Discussed it after the shir, driving back to Rehavia. Single girls. Impregnated, AID. Among them, students of mine.
Single parenthood.
Single parenthood, whatever they call it.
Rabbi Tzorat.
Single parenthood. These are what's happened in the mother. And by the way, I'm not condemning anyone. Chas v'chalila, they were one of my dear students. But she was raised in two worlds, which I've always said is not good. She was Israeli Bamakar from a right-wing community, goes to an open high school for girls, Chorev, goes to Michlala, speaks English very well, friendly with Israelis, friendly with Americans, somehow never got married. A nice girl, a firm girl. In her 40s, she had a child. No? So Rabbanim maledicted her. I met a Liacha Meiser. I couldn't help myself. I wished her mazel and gave her a bracha. And she cried. I said, what are you crying for? So she told me so many Rabbanim cursed her. And you, Rebbe, gave me a bracha. I said, look, you didn't ask me a shaila. I don't know what I would have paskin, but Liacha Meiser, you have to understand the heartache of the woman. You have to understand. The first woman to do it was a classmate of one of my daughters, of your mother. And she wrote a whole article. See, that woman is a lamdan. It also a sad story. Her parents are very brilliant, and they skipped the girl. And I want you to know, I go on record, not that anyone listens to me, my own family, I have grandchildren who were skipped. A child should never be skipped, because you don't go to school to gain knowledge. Generally speaking, your teachers are the worst influence in the world. You know the story of the guy that showed up for one class, missed the rest of the year, came back for the final, and the teacher was furious. He came back to take the final exam, and the kid says, yes. Teacher says, take it, I want to see how badly you flunk. He takes it and gets a 98. The teacher says, 98, you only attended one class. The kid says, yeah, red teacher, that's why I lost my 100, by attending one class. So, you understand, you go to school to learn social grace. That is very important. You go to school to learn how to talk to your neighbor, how to talk to your friend, how to get along, how to compromise, how to cooperate, how to be a team player. That's why we go to school. Learning is a lifelong process. Halavai should have one Rebbe that inspires you during your lifetime. I'm a lucky individual. I had many Rebbeim who inspired me. But they generally have one, two Rebbeim. All right. So that girl was skipped and skipped and skipped. She lacked social grace. Never got married. Never. But the family is the cornerstone. The minute you start breaking down, marriage is not important, being single is fine. The world revolves around you. Sex is like any other ordinary biological act. It's not the cornerstone of marriage. Sanctity, kedusha, everything we mean. Judaism sanctifies distinct roles for men and women in ritual life. Shabbat and kashrut are basic for meaningful Jewish survival. If you believe in all this, then you are not alone. Join us. With a whole list of names from the conservative movement, some of these people, some were conservative rabbis, they later got Orthodox smicha. I'm looking at the name Dr. Alan Yuda. He later gets smicha from Rav Moshe David Tender, if I recall correctly. You can correct me, maybe from YU, but you see the spirit of Solomon Schechter. And that comes back to our very early lectures this year, who Solomon Schechter was. And of course, he was a traditionalist. But in my opinion, there was one mistake. He gave in to the pressures taking down the machitza. And you all understand the feminist pressures of the early 1900s. A woman can now smoke in public. You have come a long way, Virginia Slims. The minute a woman could smoke in public, she can go to high school. Wait a minute. She goes to high school. A few years later, my mother-in-law was a normal school graduate. You know what normal school was? A teacher's college. Wow, a Jewish girl. Daughter of immigrants. She once made a mistake in class. She was born in Brooklyn, but at home they spoke only Yiddish. So she told me, till the end of her day, she felt the pain of the time she said in public school, a kalender. The words for calendar, how do you say calendar in Yiddish? Kalender. No, when you read the word in English, calendar, you can pronounce it kalender. And she said, everyone laughed at her, the teacher laughed at her, they corrected her. She went to normal school. Then you come into the synagogue, you're going to college. This is before women ever dreamt, I'll go to graduate school. Today every last girl has a master's. Half my students have PhDs, MDs, cardiologists, surgeons. I've taught women, Ribbono Shel Olam. I hope I don't fall under their knife, that's all I can say. And don't get me started on that. We'll be most to have a whole story. That's not important now. But coming back here, they go into the synagogue. They have to sit behind the machitza. And that was Solomon Schechter's biggest mistake. Because out of that, then you came further. We got rid of the machitza. 10 years later, you want to get rid of Shabbos. 20 years later, you want to get rid of Kashrut. Tarek Mashpacha certainly fell by the wayside. By the time you reach the 1980s, what will be left? That you have the first breakaway. And then comes the most famous advertisement of all. With this advertisement, now what happens a day later, 3 days later, the conservative movement as we know it comes to an end. And I quote to you, this advertisement ran in every Anglo-Jewish paper and ran in the Jerusalem Post as well. October 21st, 1983. Michael, tell the Yitzhak, tell this to Yitzhak, because this is exactly what I said 10 minutes ago, and he took issue with me. Here it is. Look at this ad. A vote is to take place at the JTS on, it says Jewish Theological Seminary, I'm just saying JTS to save time, on October 24th, 1983, on a proposal that women be admitted to the rabbinical school for ordination. We, the senior members of the Talmud department of JTS, declare that in our opinion, this is against the halakha. Professor Shaul Lieberman of blessed memory, our revered teacher, and one of the greatest rabbinic authorities of our time, rendered a decision on this subject 3 years ago. We accept this decision as binding. The sages tell us that in the case of Divrei HaRav and Divrei HaTalmud, Divrei Mi Shomim. If there is a difference of opinion between a master and his disciples, it is the master who is to be heeded. How much more so in this case when we, the disciples, are in complete agreement with the master. And what you have in this last paragraph is a much deeper thought than you see on the surface. Everyone claims they're a rabbi. I've heard this so many times. We have smicha. We can decide. We are graduates of the seminary. We're out there in the field. We know what the people are yelling and saying. We have to see that our temples survive. We do not have to listen to Professor Lieberman. And here, the leading faculty members are saying, we are the real disciples of Professor Lieberman. If it's a machloike, Divrei HaRav and Divrei HaTalmud, and it's the Talmidim all over America and all over Philadelphia and Los Angeles and Boston and wherever you have a conservative temple, still the halach is like Professor Lieberman. But halacha kama v'kama, when we, the top disciples, the leading disciples, the learned disciples, the members of the faculty, halacha kama v'kama, the halacha is in accordance with Professor Shaul Lieberman. And you know who signed on? Each name is world famous. Chaim Dzimitrovsky. That's an Israeli who taught at the seminary for many years. A Gon Adir, who had a scientific approach. you've seen the name. He has nephews, children, grandchildren, been the Yeshiva Chester, Rabbi Zimitrovsky, KBY had a Rosh Yeshiva Rabbi. That's all the same family. If I'm pronouncing it right, Joseph R. He was a Sfadik guy that until today suffers from the fact that he was at the seminary. A whole machloket goes on because the Sfadik community, the Syrians were affected by the Ashkenazim. It's part of the machloket that shirked the world today. If you know what's going on, they declared yesterday, a son of Rabbi Avadi Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Brozovar, declared that there is no rain in Israel because of the challenge to Rabbi Fadja's authority by that rabbi who is a rabbi and wants children to have an elementary school education and wants young people to be able to work for a living. Oy lachai busha. Oy lachai kalima. Yitzchak, you just missed the key overthrow of everything you said a few minutes ago, right in black and white. Michael will fill you in later. Now, you should know, the Syrian community moved right wing. The split there is very deep. And Yosef Fahira has been involved in teaching, and a whole movement began against him that he taught at the seminary. Gedolei Yisrael, including Rabbi Avadya Yosef, have stood behind him, that he's totally firm and totally observant, and even if he taught at the seminary, he did tshuva already, but he only taught there, he didn't believe in it. Another member of the faculty, also Sfadik, Israel Frankus. I don't know where Israel Frankus is today, but he's not caught up in the same controversy as Farah. Then a name that you all will recognize, perhaps the second greatest member of the seminary faculty, Professor David Halivni Weiss.
From Siget.
From originally Siget.
He was called the Elohim of Siget.
That was went through the Holocaust, had one page, I believe it was of the Shulchan Aruch, that was the only page he had all 4 years in the camps, what that man went through, and arrives in America and winds up at first in an orphanage, then he's taken out, and he's in Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chai, didn't want to eat in the orphanage, and they had to bring in Rav Shaul Lieberman, right?
Who the social worker brought him to her, to her brother-in-law. Because
Who was her brother-in-law?
Rav Shaul Lieberman.
Rav Shaul Lieberman.
But the reason why he didn't is because the guy who was the Rav Machshir was a Musmach from Torah Vadas. And he asked him a pitchichuv in the
Yom Kippur. He asked him a pitchichuv in the Yom Kippur. The guy didn't know. So he didn't want him from his heksha. So they brought him to the most moving story I read. I read Halivni's autobiography.
Great. Fantastic.
So I gained a little new respect. You know, I have my problems with Rabbi Yitzchak. It's not for you, you're young kids yet. Who am I to speak about the Pachad Yitzchak? But to say it very simply, I don't like someone who takes a picture of his Rebbe off the wall. Understand? You have a right to go different than your Rebbe, but you have no right to take your Rebbe's picture off the wall. And that, I have a big problem with Rabbi Yitzchak. You know, Rav Kook, I mean, well known. I knew Rav Kook, and I knew Chaim Berlin. I grew up, it was all one world then. So I got to tell you one nice thing about Rabbi Yitzchak Kutner. David Halivni came to Chaim Berlin for Shabbos at the orphanage, and they see this kid, you know, knows Kol HaTorah Kula Baal Peh, and Rav Kutner sees the way he's dressed. He went out and bought him a new suit. The first suit he got in America, his Shabbos suit, Rav Yitzchak Kutner bought for him. So, Baruch Hashem. But when you talk about Rav David Halivni Weiss, I don't have to tell you who you're talking about. No one in the world can say he wasn't from. All right, he had a scientific approach. We don't all have to accept his kiddushim scientifically. There was a fellow here in the Kolo last year who had on his desk, remember, Rav David Halivni's kiddushim. What did you learn yesterday? What masechet? Was it Baba Batra? So he had Rav David Halivni's kiddushim on masechet Baba Batra. So he had it right on. No, he had it on his desk. I guess he looks at it after all the shiurim. Diddley, I just want to tell you, Rabbi Yitzchak Chutner was a first cousin to our revered neighbor, Rabbi Yoshua Chutner, Zeichet Tzadik Lebracha. You follow? They were first cousins. And your Sabu had the schut when Rabbi Yitzchak Chutner would visit the building. I would wait downstairs, meet him at the elevator, and take him up to Rabbi Yoshua Chutner. You follow? So, these gedolim, but there was a big difference between them. Tahom mahuti beinayim, a tremendous chasm in their hashkafa. Now, who is the final signature? All right, gentlemen, I haven't missed the morning minyan. I don't want to say a word because some of you daven bam kaisel. You understand? You guys don't even know that expression anymore. Ich daven nicht bam kaisel. I daven at a minyan. It's been generations since I missed the morning minyan, except when I was in communist Russia sometimes. But I mean, when I have, you know, when I have a minyan, when I can, haven't missed in many, many sake. It doesn't matter. Anyway, who I've been daven with for the last years, with decades, Professor Dov Slotnik. I just davened with him this morning, 5:30 minyan, Ongel Rivka. Dov Zlatnik was the Talmud Mufak of Professor Shol Lieberman. Professor Zlatnik, I can say, Eidut Nemanan. What's his specialty? What is he published on? Mishnayot. He knows Shisha Sidrei Mishnah by heart. You can ask him any question from the Mishnah, and he will tell you where to find it. And when Professor Liebman died, had no children, no wife, his will read that Dov Slotnik would be the executor of his estate. So I don't have to tell you, five signatures, top quality people. I believe this was the entire senior faculty. You might have had stagiaires under them, but how many do you need at the seminary? We have five names here. I think that covers it all. I don't recall anyone else of any stature teaching at the seminary. Shama Friedman is yet a kid at this time. Gentlemen, 3 days later, October 24th, 1983, how many months after Professor Liebman's death? March 23rd, figure it out. April, May, June, July, August, September, approximately half the year after his death. Matai Yamutu Otoze Kanim, the seminary voted to accept women into the graduate school for becoming rabbis. And this was their answer. This was their response. Within a few years, everyone who signed this advertisement had retired from the seminary. Professor Avigdor Weiss left immediately, went on to a full professorship at Columbia University, and one by one, the traditional element left the faculty. The Union for Traditional Conservative Judaism grew by leaps and bounds. And by the end of the year, December 1983, they ran an advertisement exactly repeating what the advertisement had said so many months earlier, except with one tremendous headline. We have grown tenfold in 5 weeks. In other words, a certain element realized, among them students of mine, relatives of mine were involved, they realized they could not go on at the seminary. The die was cast. What did Professor Liebman say in defense of his being at the seminary? In principle, the seminary accepts the authority of the Shulchan Aruch. With that vote to ordain women, we can say the seminary abrogated the authority of what we popularly call the Shulchan Aruch. I don't believe anyone at that time would ever dream that 20 years later the Orthodox world would be caught up in such battle over the exact same issue. But you see a trend developing. Ger v'toshav anochi umachem. Remember the Rebbe's Divrei Torah? I have quoted it so many times. We live a dual existence. We are part of the big world. Everyone looked at the New York Times this morning. Everyone wants to see what these leaks are about, what these telegrams are talking about. Everyone is concerned with the implications for the Western world, for security, for lives. Of course we're concerned. We're citizens of the big world. What happens in Saudi Arabia, what happens in America, what happens across the globe affects each and every one of us. But concomitantly, we are gerim. We are different. We live differently. We think differently. We act differently. Our religious expression is different. As the Rebbe would always say, the very way we write is so different. Left to right, right to left. Right there, there's a tremendous difference. Until 83, 84, 85, you could still say the seminary tried to follow halacha, it innovated. All right, we all went through Solomon Schechter's thinking, I can't repeat it now, we all went through Louis Ginsberg's thinking. But by this point in time, the halacha is cast aside, cast away. It is not a fact. The Orthodox world we thought was immune, but not so. That Ger v'toshav works within our very blood. And at times we don't know where the boundaries are. And watch. Fabulous article, which captures the seminary at this moment in time, appeared in the New York Times, June 22nd, 1984. I'm quoting from the second section, page 2. What's very interesting is the person who wrote the article. Ari Goldman. Anyone recognize the name? Ari Goldman? Yeshiva College graduate. First cousin to, give me the name, a nephew of Rabbi Norman Lamb.
Oh, no.
A nephew of Rabbi Azriel Miller, first cousin to someone you have daily contact with in Griscolel, Rabbi David Miller. First cousin. Ari Goldman. My search for God at Harvard, if I'm quoting his magnum opus correctly. Read it. And when you read it, you should know that Aaron Ratkeffet knows the name of the woman he was mad at. I don't want to go into more detail. I don't want to blacken my mouth. I know the name of the girl. She's a frum girl and thank God married and a grandmother today. I know the family. I know her friends. Many of her friends were my students in Mechlala. And that's the girl Ari Goldman is mad at because of reasons that make Balev and Franco look like tzaddikim, if you know contemporary Israeli nourishment. Now, this story is very interesting. It's about Rabbi Beverly Magnuson. She lives in Albany today. I checked her out. She's a chaplain in senior citizens residence. She's no youngster. But here she was, a religious girl who wanted to become a rabbi. And she was not exposed to Torah teachers. She was not exposed to a shiur like I gave a few months ago, which I just quote one line, that a woman can be a Hasidic Rebbe, but she cannot be a rabbi. And the whole shiur is to explain that line, and I stand on every syllable all the more today. She wanted to be a rabbi, and she was Shomeret Shabbat and Shomeret Kashrut, as she understood it. And the only place she could go was Reform. And now she becomes a Reform rabbi, but her goal is really to be a conservative rabbi, because she's much more traditional than Reform at that time. And here she is, she can't be accepted into the rabbinical assembly yet, because they're not accepting women rabbis who have not graduated the seminary. And this interview with her, she's prophetic. I mean, her words are totally clairvoyant. June 22nd, 1984, Clifton Park, New York. Every Saturday morning, the rabbi of the Beth Shalom congregation walks nearly 2 miles to the synagogue, dons a prayer shawl, and conducts a Sabbath service complete with a sermon and the reading of the Torah. The rabbi is much like any other in Judaism's conservative movement, except for one thing. The rabbi is a woman. And because of this, she has not been accepted by the movement's governing body, the Rabbinical Assembly. The rabbi, Beverly Magnuson, who was ordained by the Reform Movement, was turned down last month by the 1,200 member all-male conservative rabbinical group. She was also rejected in 1983. And Rabbi Magnuson, who wears a colorful embroidered yarmulke on a head of curly red hair, said that conservative Judaism believes in, quote, tradition and change, but that the change must come after painstaking examination of precedents as well as sociological changes and needs. You see here, you see the thinking? You see the way she responds? She's a class example of what conservative Judaism was. I'm glad that the conservative rabbin is struggling with this issue, she said, with regard to the question of her admission to the rabbinical body. It is only a matter of time, she said, before the rabbinical assembly embraces her and other women as equals. Note that she hit the nail on the head. Clairvoyant, 100%. Then there's interesting scuttlebutt of the congregants. Male members of the congregation, however, do not see Rabbi Magnuson as a woman's rabbi, according to Michael Weitzman, the synagogue's president. Quote, when she's up there like a rabbi, she's gender neutral, with the same qualities and drawbacks as a man. When pressed about her drawbacks, Mr. Weitzman mentioned a complaint about Rabbi Magnuson that is often made about rabbis. Quote, at times, he said, she can be long-winded, the same way a man rabbi is. Gentlemen, if you haven't been taught this in homiletics, I was taught it by Herbert S. Goldstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and he taught us, when you get up to preach, if you can't give the message in 12 minutes, sit down and don't get up at all. Yes, Rabbi Rubin?
His successor in that course was Rabbi Joseph Buxton.
Right.
And he said, if you don't strike oil in 4 to 8 minutes, stop worrying.
Stop worrying. Okay. Baruch Hashem. I will confess publicly.
He was taken over by his son.
That the only time I ever bored a congregational audience was in 1962 in Maplewood, New Jersey. We had organized a new Orthodox shul, and there was a big kashrut scandal, and I was fighting to get kashrut under communal control. And I gave a whole talk with examples of a geplaitet in Weltereine. How to translate that is beyond me. But all I can tell you is, subsequently, I don't believe I've ever bored an audience from the pulpit. If you can't say it in 12 minutes, don't get up at all. Now, listen to this. Then they talk about her personal example. Rabbi Matheson would rather walks rather than rides in a car to the synagogue on the Sabbath and holy days, and refrains from using the telephone in those days. She insists that the kosher food be strictly enforced in the synagogue and no cooking be performed on the Sabbath. Sounds good. Sounds wonderful, right? Did anyone ever come across a Magnuson? Is there a Baal Tshuva in the family? Is there a second generation, a third generation? Listen to this paragraph. As an accommodation to the rabbi, members of the congregation drive to her home for Sabbath services in bad weather when it is difficult for her to walk. So do you see what's going on here? You see where you stand? You see where the breakdown is? And now I take you back to a moment in time. It's in my new book with the exact date. I saved a lot of shtiklach papir, a lot of pieces of paper. My wife always yelled at me, why do you save these pieces of paper? I want to tell you, every little piece of paper I saved became invaluable in writing a scholarly memoir. And I'll talk about that more in this very course when I explode like an atom bomb against Art Crow's history series and show you absolute falseness. And Aaron Rakefid has the documents to back it up. So moving back in time and moving back to my second shtela, where I built the first Orthodox synagogue, suburban Essex County, where I went in Aliyah from 62 to 69, Maplewood, New Jersey. We were on the corner of Maplewood, South Orange. It was one community with one high school. If you want to know Maplewood, New Jersey, Jason Alexander grew up in Maplewood, New Jersey. Okay? So, Jetty Atlas knows me from Lower Marion Synagogue, Maplewood, New Jersey. Now, we're a little Orthodox synagogue caught up in the heartland of the conservative reform movement. Temples that were bigger than the Beis HaMikdash stood on all sides of me. And we want to break through and accomplish, and these temples are filled with the sons and daughters and grandchildren of Shomer Shabbos Jews from Newark. But all they knew about was the endless machlokes between the Rabbanim, and there was no education. So one time we have a presence, Irvington, New Jersey, neighboring community, the big Y is there, moved out of Newark into Irvington. They're sponsoring a night debate between an Orthodox, conservative, and Reform rabbi. Yeah. I don't have to tell you the crowd that came out. Blood. 700-800 people. Mob scene. Standing room only. The Reform rabbi, read my book, get his name. He dropped out of the debate at the end of 2 minutes. I don't think he knew how to read Hebrew right side up. The conservative rabbi, who was president of the rabbinical assembly, we spoke about him, Rabbi Dr. Theodore Friedman. And he took on a young kid in the rabbinate, Aaron Rothkopf. And here I am, 800 pairs of ears. I've told the story over the years, Nicola, but now it has to be told in context. And I say to Rabbi Friedman, you are a Catholic rabbi. A little kid, I'm in my 20s. This guy's on top of the world, president of the rabbinical assembly, rabbi of the biggest conservative temple. His salary probably was 100 times mine. No, and I say, you are a Catholic rabbi. And 800 pairs of ears jumped forward and he said, well, you are a Catholic rabbi. The Catholics have two sets of observance. The clergy observes on one level, and the masses observe on another level. Is that correct? Correct. How do you go to synagogue on Shabbos? I walk. You walk? How come you have a parking lot for all your congregants to park? You are a Catholic rabbi. You observe Shabbos, and they have different laws that you sanctify. That is not Torah. We have no concept of clergy. We are one. We are all B'nai Israel. The audience went crazy with applause. Exactly what you see here with Beverly Magnuson. Could you imagine? It's raining. She can't walk to shul. So 20 people drive to her house on the Sabbath to have a service around her kitchen table. Think where we're at. This is the start of the Chabura movement. You see, all these seeds are being planted right there in the 1980s. By the way, to tell you the end of the story with that debate, I come home, it was, I have the exact date, everything. I think it was a Thursday night. And my wife gives me the devil, what are you wasting your time for? You have to go to yeshiva tomorrow, you have to go to New York, it's Erev Shabbos, you have so much to do. Here it is 12 midnight, you're coming in exhausted, and you think you influence anybody? You're wasting your time. Generally speaking, the woman is always right. It's an open Gemara in Masechet Nida, Bini Yotera Benashim. This time, Didli, your grandmother was so Sunday, I got a call from a family from Newark. Rabbi, we want to thank you. We were searching. We want more religion in our lives. We didn't know whether to go to the conservative temple, to go Orthodox. We're going to go to an Orthodox synagogue after what you said about the driving on Shabbos. We keep on thinking about it. P.S. That family became real Balei Tshuva. Believe me, they wouldn't eat in my house in a year from then. And many children came in Aliyah. There must be 100 direct descendants al Admat HaKodesh as a result of my words to Teddy Friedman. So once in my life, the Gemara was proven not to be totally correct. My dear students, there's so much to talk about, but I want to move on. No, you should have asked one question. Nachum, yes. No, I don't know.
When they
were
the decision of the commission?
No, this already was the Jewish Theological Seminary. It was the faculty, and it was a whole group that had representation from United Synagogue. This was setting official policy for the conservative movement. Well, once you have three rabbis who say you can admit, first of all, they're not involved. The Rabbinical Assembly doesn't control the seminary. Zelichud v'zelichud. But the faculty was involved, the United Synagogue was involved, Rabbinic Assembly, but this was unbelievable. That advertisement, and it didn't help Yehuz there. The five top faculty members, that's like Rabbi Slahavil, Rabbi Soloveitchik, and Rabbi Volk, and Rabbi Lipschitz, and Rabbi Gorelick, and Rabbi Bornstein signing an ad in Yeshiva, and the Board of Trustees turning around and spitting in their face. You understand what happened here? Boom! But it was inevitable.
It's not like the Union of Traditional Judaism isn't really...
The Rebbe knows what's going on. Give it time. We're in the 80s right now.
I'll go check my sources for next week.
Yeah.
The process was from the field up.
Right, I've said that.
In other words, conservative synagogue were hiring women rabbis
from
RRC and HUC.
The United...
And
there was
pressure
on the rabbinical assembly
to accept it.
Exactly.
The rabbinical assembly was putting pressure on the seminary to make it official.
Beverly Magnuson is the finest example, but I believe
she wasn't
in
the first.
She was in a conservative temple, absolutely. And what you're saying is absolutely right. And the pressure—that's what I've been saying all along—that you're sitting in an ivory tower in Broadway and 122nd Street.
But it was the Talmud factory that faculty that was sitting in an ivory tower.
And the pressures were unbelievable. Well, the Talmud,
they're no longer in touch with their own rabbi.
No longer in touch, as you would say, with their own reality.
Yeah.
Right. Well, they were in touch with their students. I don't want to say that, but they were in touch with the more traditional element, and they were upset with the element that was not as traditional.
But the conservative movement in Israel,
it's a different story. It's a different story. That they are closer to the union of traditional Judaism than they are to the seminary. The seminary broke with them. There were tremendous machloket last year over the homosexual issue. I know my student stands at the head here, David Golinkin, Professor Golinkin.
He writes tshuvas in which he tries
right. He's a Talmud of Louis. He edited Louis Ginsberg's response to literature. I don't know if he studied with him. I don't believe so, because Louis Ginsberg, he's too young. He studied with me in the 70s. By that time, Louis Ginsberg was gone, and he went on to the seminary after BMT. But Golinkin married a student of mine. His marriage, it's a Torontonian he married. The marriage didn't last. The children, it's a sad, listen, divorce is a sad story, David. But I have to ask a different question. While all this was going on, one name we did not mention at all today, a name that is crucially important in the history of the seminary, a name we referred to and spoke about, and that is Louis Finkelstein. Professor Finkelstein. What happened to Professor Finkelstein? What happened to Rabbi Dr. Louis Finkelstein in all this? Now, he lived a long life. I can give you his years, 1895, 1991. He was born in Cincinnati. His father was a European Shirav. Then his father came to Brooklyn. I've seen pictures of his father. Believe me, he looked no different than the other Rabbanim in Brooklyn. They all had long beards and black clothes. Rabbi Tamishov, they were great Rabbanim there. Afterwards, Rabbi Klushkin comes. You have no idea what Brooklyn had Rabbanim. In Bedford Stuyvesant today, where no Jew would walk out of fear. In East New York, which was the heart of Judaism, Rabbi Lubavitz was there, one after another. Crown Heights, what later developed in Crown Heights, before Lubavitch. So you see, Finkelstein, of course, was traditional. Finkelstein was, of course, Shoma Mitzvah. But by the 1970s, he gradually disappears from the seminary scene due to ill health. He suffers debilitating disease. He's in a wheelchair.
He couldn't leave his apartment.
Ultimately, he could not leave his apartment. You're going to see what I'm going to tell you about that in a second. He was a figurehead. Everyone revered him. He was the chancellor. He had published some fascinating volumes. Rabbi Akiva published on about the Rabbi Nachman, the Pharisees, and the three volumes set, and he published this on the Midrashei Halakha. Let me say it right. Halachic Midrashim in English, but Midrashei Halakha be Yevrit. He published, he was well known, but he was ill. He lived a long life. In other words, he was active, I would say, to the early 70s, the mid-70s. But I can read here from his biography, when he became frail in his later years and had trouble walking to synagogue, his students and admirers turned his home into a synagogue. And I had a number of students. Did you daven there?
They didn't drive.
Well, they didn't drive. No, they were Shoma Torah. I know someone who studied with me here in BMT, Aronson. He went to that minyan. That minyan, very interestingly, became Kehilat Orach Eliezer. That's the Kehilah Orthodox, but very innovative. They are right near the seminary. You haven't heard about it. They were in the headlines with their spiritual leader today. For years, Professor Halivni Weiss was considered the spiritual leader of the shul. When he came in Aliyah, they were in a quandary, and they there were various spiritual leaders there. Man was dying. I know the young. Finally today, it is a woman who is not called the rabbi because they don't want to break with Professor Halivni's sock. She doesn't preach a sermon during the davening, but she is looked up to as the spiritual guide of the synagogue. Without going into great detail, I can tell you a little bit of the story of Yeshiva College in my time, Talmudical Academy, Yeshiva College. I don't want to mention her name, I don't want to mention anything. I taught her brother, I taught her sister, not important now. Her father grew up in the Bronx. Her father was the son of a Hasidish Sheikhid in the Bronx. You got to remember, there were millions of Jews in the Bronx. There were, you saw the documentary on the Rav, you saw the chicken markets. Thursday they started shechting at 8 o'clock in the morning. They didn't finish until a few hours before Shabbat on Friday. Everyone came with their chickens. Her grandfather was a Sheikhid. Her father was 1 year ahead of me, was a classmate of Nachum Lamb's father, Avraham Lamb or Ani Lamb. Ani and I both had the same names, Ani and Ani. We were a year apart. This father of hers was the only student in yeshiva in my time who went with his tzitzit sticking out. Hundreds and hundreds of students. No one had a black hat. That goes without, that's a given. No one dared wear a black hat. The Rav didn't wear a black hat. Rav David Lifshitz wore a black hat. The Mashgiach had a black hat. A Yudapeshadav. Only when they walked in the street, not when they davened or gave a shir. Talis was over the cup and they gave a shir. You took off your hat. It's not like today. People don't part with their black hats. He was the only kid who was sitting out, as Yehuda Singer says when he went into Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich's class, he paid a price for it. His life was in danger when you walked in with you. I can still see Rabbi Yeruchim yelling at him, Mikushka Mishitzah, Yod Bacha Mitzvah, Oy, the Sitzin Zayin Droizin, Sitonacha Mitzvah Chayim Kel, Oy, what went on with Rabbi Ruchim? Oh, it was unbelievable. And okay, but I want to tell you, you know what became of her father? He became the chazan in the largest conservative temple in Detroit, where he remains until today. He must be there over 50 years. The temple where Rabbi Adler was the rabbi, the man who signed on, permitted driving the shul on Shabbos, that's where her father became the chazan. Her mother is a Stern College graduate, but I have to say, the older two children are totally from as far as I know. And this daughter also is from, she's a long gun. Forget about her name. Not important.
Now. Everything you told us, you give us her name.
Yeah. No, that is not important.
It's in a footnote in the book.
But she is the spiritual leader, Dan.
She's.
Her name I don't know. I know her maiden name. But I don't want to give the maiden name after I spoke, you know, that the father became a conservative rabbi. Look it up. Check out the temple in Detroit. But this is what happened with Orach Eliezer. Why is it called Orach Eliezer? What is Professor Finkelstein's name? Louis Finkelstein. What is his Hebrew name? Louis becomes Eliezer. So Orach Eliezer, that congregation, that shul, which has a mechitza and davened strictly according to tradition, but has the innovations, among others, of the woman being the spiritual leader, the one they asked Shilas to. I understand she was Masada Kedushin already. This is what I've been told. Professor Halivni Weiss is in Israel. He's no longer around. They no longer have to fear him or ignore him. Use the words you want. So this is an interesting fallout. But finally, let me end off. Yes. Professor Finkelstein moves aside. He is revered, he is sanctified, let's use that word. His image is hallowed, if I may use that word. But by the 1970s, he plays no real role in the seminary. With Gerson Cohn, who led the seminary and was innovative, and the ordination of women by the mid-80s, he's incapacitated as well. Ill health, suffering, can't continue in his office, and in the mid-80s, you have a very dramatic election campaign for the new presidency of the seminary. Very fascinating what happens on Broadway and 122nd Street. So to reiterate, what did we do today? All right, Baruch Hashem, we've gone a little bit further with the seminary history. I think the saddest part of today's lecture is the advertisement by the five leading faculty members, which essentially is pleading with the populace of the seminary, the conservative movement, don't smack Professor Shaul Lieberman in the face. We had a Gaon among us, we had a Tzaddik amongst us. Don't change the seminary. They couldn't win. The forces from the street, from the ground, was so strong, they could not win. With the vote to accept women into the rabbinical school, you now move into a new era. You can no longer say, and they say it openly, the Shulchan Aruch is no longer our lodestar. It is no longer our posel. We can innovate. Once Salomon Schechter gave up the Mechitza, then 80 years later, you can officially say, we're giving up the Shulchan Aruch.
But not only the Shulchan Aruch, also the validity of the Torah is a divine document.
Say that, say that.
I wouldn't say that. That's worse.
You're jumping ahead. I will come to it. But I want to show you shlab shlab. You're going to see what happens in the election. You're going to see what happens afterwards. And bear in mind,
this was not philosophy.
I agree. I just said that. The pressures on the ground. I agree with you. I can't escape the facts. There was a revolution on the ground. And these were the results. These were the results. There was a revolution in the conservative temples across the length and breadth of America. It ultimately even reaches Queens, as traditional as Queens is. It is right in Queens that they got rid of rabbis who wouldn't allow women to have aliyah in conservative temples. And that happened right under our nose in the last few years. But you see here the pressures building up on the ground. And once you innovate, you've opened the door. And ultimately, you cannot stop the rabbis, women, cantors we're going to see, which is even worse than women rabbis. And then you come into the modern day and age, and it's overwhelming. A movement that began in 1887 with a charter that read in total loyalty to the written Torah and the oral Torah. A movement that began that they wanted to call it the Orthodox Jewish Theological Seminary, and they dropped the word Orthodox for very simple utilitarian purposes to be able to get money from Reform too and not scare them away. And look where we're at 100 years later. Okay, now just let me mention, there are no classes next week due to Hanukkah. We pick up again in 2 weeks' time, Be'ezrat Hashem. It's hard to believe it's Hanukkah because the weather outside is what used to be July and August weather. Here are copies of the famous ad. When you take it, you have to take two pages because I couldn't copy the. I didn't want to make it smaller because the print is small enough. So you have to take two pages. Once again, if anyone wants, the Kovei Spate. This is Divrei Torah from Colin Stullen, but it's Klal Yisrael Torah. It's very, very good. These are the sources on the Cleves get, on the lecture that was given. I published, but this one just gave a lecture, gives earlier sources. And if anyone is a Gabbai in a shul, this is the official book that they print for Gabbayim, showing you what's available. And wow, it's a great world. What industry. My dear students, I want to wish everyone a Chag Urim Sameach. I want to thank the old-time students who were here, who graced the class, bringing us back to the 70s and bringing us back to the 80s. And I gave them the exact date of Professor Liebman's death. You asked, March 23rd. It was on the plane. I told the whole story. You were maskin ishkachat. I want to thank the Lipsons for coming and gracing us with their presence. I feel bad that you have to go back to Canada and freeze a little, but at least you have rain, you have water, which we may very soon be lacking. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya. Now, David, check out if this came out clear.